You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program, Saturday evening, May 3rd. I am live, unrehearsed, and uncensored here at my flagship studio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM/FM affiliates of the Liberty News Radio Network, simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org to a worldwide audience that has us once again ranked in the top 10 of all radio shows in the country tonight based on internet traffic, and that's not even including those tuned in on the terrestrial AM dial stations. Continuing our discussion, a discussion and a commentary on the Donald Sterling question, the likes of which you have undoubtedly not heard anywhere else but this network, Kevin McDonald, Dr. Kevin McDonald, now joining me. He is, of course, a professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, the founding editor of the Occidental Observer at theoccidentalobserver.net. Kevin has written several epic books, including The Culture of Critique and Cultural Insurrections. Dr. McDonald, great to have you back. I said earlier, if we have you on again before June, you get promoted to a co-host.
Hey, thank you, James. Very, very, very good to be here.
Great to have you back. Well, I was looking for talent to talk about the situation going on with the Los Angeles Clippers. I found it tonight in you and Richard Spencer. Richard was on just before you. And you have written an article about this, actually, entitled, simply enough, Donald Sterling's Remarks. Why don't you just kind of basically give us your general take on this, and then we'll go from there.
Well, there are a couple of things. The first thing I started off with was that Sterling is Jewish, which was not mentioned in the mainstream media accounts. He's a white guy, you know, so it's white racism all over again. Some of the accounts, including the one in the New York Times, was describing as a Southern. These are Southerner attitudes. And, you know, he's a Jewish guy from L.A. And then I started talking about the sort of subtext there. He basically did not want his girlfriend hanging out with black guys. That it was embarrassing and gave the wrong impression. And but it wasn't that he really disliked blacks, I don't think. I don't see that anywhere. I think he basically makes business decisions. I mean, he's sort of famous around L.A. here because he won't – his apartment buildings, he hasn't rented to blacks like in Beverly Hills or some sort of nicer areas. And in Koreatown, he won't he was brought up for charges because he hadn't rented to people who weren't Korean. But he's, you know, I'm sure it's just a business decision that Koreans want to be with Koreans and white people want to be with white people, basically. And so, you know, when you start bringing blacks in, it's a problem for his business. So that's his attitude, really. I don't think it's the way people have portrayed it.
Well, he certainly didn't get the memo that somewhere during the civil rights era, blacks won the right never to be offended. But, you know, forcing the sale of his team now over something he merely said seems outrageous, because you just mentioned he was sued by the Bush administration in 2006 for allegedly refusing to rent to blacks and Hispanics in that Beverly Hills complex and to non-Koreans, as you mentioned, in Koreatown. He settled that case. Now, of course, I don't blame him for not wanting to rent to people. That would likely drive property values down and perhaps run off other tenants. And he should have the freedom as a property owner to make that decision. Right. But that was, of course, really what the civil rights movement ultimately was all about, was taking away the rights of ownership and property and association, so on and so forth. But between these two instances, Kevin, it seems as though that would be the one more alarming to the commissars of diversity, but apparently not. That wasn't as egregious as it was a fairly innocuous comment as far as I'm concerned. But I do want to talk about the Jewish aspect. And does it surprise you? Of course, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, is Jewish. He just took over this year from David Stern, who had been the commissioner for 30 years, also Jewish. A disproportionate amount of the owners in the NBA of the franchises are Jewish. Does it surprise you to an extent that they didn't close ranks and protect one of their own, which they typically do, or that they allowed him to be martyred?
That's an interesting question. You're right. I mean, the NBA, approximately half the owners, I'd say, are Jewish. And as you say, the commissioner's been Jewish for over 30 years, for a very long time. And I don't know. I am a little surprised, I guess, the political correctness now is just so extreme. And the media just got on this so fast, and it was such a big story so quickly. I don't think they could take damage control on
it. And perhaps the NBA wanted to take the path of least resistance and not upset the apple cart. And I'm going to talk to you about what financial ramifications might have come had Adam Silver taken a different path. But, the media certainly perpetuated this out of proportion and exaggerated the seriousness of the situation. And of course, as we know, the media itself is Jewish dominated. And again, it comes back to the question, does it surprise you that they're treating one of their own like a white Southerner?
Without mentioning that he's not a white Southerner. A little bit, but I think that they see this as just another example where they can make someone into an example, someone who loses status and property and everything else because of this. Paula Deen, there's just the whole series of these people. If they say something that's a little bit wrong, and I think we're really entering this age, or we've been in this age of real tyranny now, where just getting out of line a little bit, you can lose your job, you can lose your all kinds of things. I think he's just seen as someone who was expendable, and he doesn't have a good reputation because of people around L.A. He's been known because of these lawsuits about who he rents to and so on. That's been an issue. So he's not like he's some kind of paragon of virtue in their view.
And I think too, perhaps they saw that in sacrificing him on the altar of political correctness, they could further strengthen their vice grip in letting people know that if you say something that you're not supposed to say, this could happen to you. Yeah, he just so happens to be Jewish. I'm sure they would prefer that he wasn't. But I guess in the grand scheme of things, this is one 81-year-old guy who got out of line, and it furthers perhaps the greater good of forcing this cultural Marxism down the throats of the rest of us would-be dissidents, or not that we are would-be dissidents, Kevin, certainly we are full-blown dissidents, but others that perhaps would talk out in a politically correct manner don't become the next Donald Sterling. Is that perhaps part of the thought process? I mean, we're hypothesizing now, of course.
I do think so. I mean, I think they pretty much, I don't know if anybody's above this now. They go after people just ruthlessly if they get out of line. I mean, I was struck that the Southern Poverty Law Center was trolling on Stormfront. They got some teacher that they outed. I mean, it's just like a scorched earth policy. Everybody is involved here, and you just can't. You're not above this, and they're gonna. It's just absolute tyranny out there.
And of course, Donald Sterling's gonna be okay. Don't cry any crocodile tears over Sterling, folks. Richard Spencer mentioned he certainly deserves contempt, not for the reasons the media's given it to him, but he's still gonna be a billionaire tomorrow, and he's gonna be all right. We're gonna take a break and come back with Kevin McDonald to continue this conversation, actually conclude this conversation in the next segment. Stay tuned.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211, and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again, and, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We got one more segment. We've been talking about this Donald Sterling story for the better part of an hour now, with Richard Spencer in the first hour now, with Dr. Kevin McDonald, our esteemed guest. Kevin, in the last hour, Richard and I were talking about how the media just breathlessly was in a competition with one another to see who could denounce Donald Sterling the most and prove to their editors how on board they were with the suppression of politically incorrect thoughts. But I'll tell you what didn't make the news and what doesn't make the news as it relates to the NBA. You can't even possibly count how many players in the league are felons. And now anytime any of these NBA players commit a crime, it might make a story for a day or two. It's nothing like this. And certainly that would be a far more serious situation to deal with, I believe, than this. But also, as we mentioned in the last hour, Kevin, Jay-Z, the owner or part owner of the Brooklyn Nets franchise, he was last year part owner. He had a party in which he let it be known that whites were not allowed. You had former NBA player Larry Johnson say this week that he wanted an all-black league. He didn't even want white players in the league anymore in response to Sterling. It's a black league. It needs to be all-black and all-black owners, all-black management. That didn't make the news. Shaquille O'Neal, who, of course, was a perennial NBA all-star and now anchors the Inside the NBA show on TNT, which is the NBA's flagship sports cable news show. He was on the internet this week making fun. You can look this up. I'm trying not to exaggerate this in any way. Making fun of a retarded child, a kid with Down syndrome or autism or something along the lines, making a picture in which he mocks the appearance of this. That didn't make the news. Kevin, comment on that first of all, and then I want to get to something that I've really been waiting to talk about.
Well, it's interesting because those three stories I was not really aware of, and I'm a fairly informed person. So, I read the LA Times every day, and I'm on the internet and all that. I've never heard any of those stories. So, yeah, they're not very well publicized. But that's what you were saying before about these media types just falling all over themselves, competing to to be the most outraged by this. You know, you see that also at universities. The faculty just being sort of competing with each other on these faculty email lists, being outraged about someone like me or other aspects of political incorrectness. So that's a big part of it. It's like, you know, competition to be the most morally impeccable, and you do that by denouncing, by being, you know, the absolute paragon of virtue, and quite a bit of competition there, and sort of display like a peacock showing off, you know.
Absolutely, that's a very appropriate way to depict these folks. Let me ask you this though. The NBA players are saying that they want it to be an all-black league, and my co-host just walked in, Eddie Miller. He said, "What about? Do they want all-black? All-black fans?" Because here's the thing: you look at any NBA city, from Memphis to Atlanta, even majority-black cities like that, to Los Angeles, to Boston, Portland, it's all white in the fans. It's 90% plus white fans. So if the NBA had taken a different stance, do you think that the fans really wouldn't be at these playoff games this week? If the NBA had merely fined him and said they disagree with the comments and that doesn't reflect the NBA rather than trying to steal the team or whatever, do you think that there really would have been a fallout from the people who gives the NBA their money?
Yeah, sure. You're actually right about the fans being almost all white, and they probably wouldn't have cared that much about it. It wouldn't be like a big deal to them. Absolutely right. But and you think about, you know, so there's a lot of talk about, you know, coaches need to be more black and stuff like that. But if you look at the crowd, you know, if the coaches should look like the crowd, you could say, or something like that, as well as look like the players. So, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy going on here, obviously.
What's your take on the reaction from the players? Of course, they were saying everything you would expect them to say, but I read that the Clippers were considering not playing in their playoff game, the first game after these comments were made to light. But of course they didn't take. Now, I would have given them some respect if they had taken that stand. If they felt so strongly about this that they boycotted a playoff game and just didn't show up, that would have really turned things on its head. That would have shown me they were serious about this. But what did they do? No, they didn't do that. They wore black socks to the game. And then the NBA or the media said how courageous that was and what an incredible protest that was for them to wear black socks to the game because you're supposed to wear white socks. And that was their protest. I mean, is that bravery, Kevin?
It's not bravery. That's a good example of courageous. You know, that Eric Holder was saying that Sotomayor's opinion in the affirmative action case was courageous because, you know, she made a dissent. But, of course, it wasn't courageous. It was praised to the skies by the elite media. And so, you know, in other words, they get a huge amount of reinforcement of those things. Courage is doing something where you're going to get a lot of static for it. Most people, they're not getting any static for it.
And then I saw where the coach of the Warriors, this was really rich, the coach of the Warriors, which is the team, of course, that the Clippers are playing in the playoffs right now, he went after the NBA had handed down its lifetime ban of Sterling. See, Sterling, even though he owns the team, he can't go to any games, he can't go to any practices, he can't go to any team buildings or any NBA-related facilities. And, of course, now he's being forced to sell the team and he was fined $2 million. The coach of the Warriors, after that decision was handed down, said that if the NBA had done anything less than that, the Warriors weren't going to play in the next game. Well, it's easy to say what you weren't going to do if something didn't go the way that it did. You know, do you think that he would have stuck to that and the Warriors truly wouldn't have played had the NBA done anything less than what they did? I mean, certainly that's preposterous to assume that they
would. I really don't think so. I don't know. I think Mark Jackson is going to be out of there anyway, but it's not preposterous.
And then it said, you were a professor of psychology, so tell me what's going on psychologically speaking with this example. Chris Paul, who is the point guard, the star guard for the Clippers, he came out of the tunnel before the warm-ups and he was crying. Now, who's to say he didn't squirt a little saline solution in his eye? The cameras had his eyes glistening because he was just so upset over the situation, but he had to have the courage to go out there and play anyway. I mean, psychologically speaking, assuming he was truly crying over this, what's wrong with that guy? You know, to cry over these comments, could he have possibly been that, you know, personally offended, or is this just another ruse?
I read that too, that the people in the stands were doing all this, we are one, we are one. Again, it's like this religious rite. When something like this happens, it's an opportunity for all the everybody to just, you know, display their sympathies with the politically correct attitude. So it becomes just a feeding a frenzy of people just competing for this. And I guess Chris Paul's is right up there. I mean,
and Charles Barkley, another guy like Shaq, who has an IQ 2 points below that of a tumbleweed, he said that he has it on good authority that no NBA team will play next year if the forced sale of the Clippers is not completed by the next regular season. Nobody in the NBA is going to play. Now, do you really think that they're going to walk away from millions and millions of dollars? It's just this thing is a great case study, Kevin, on what political correctness, the links to which political correctness has gone. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah, I think that's why. And I, you know, it's interesting that I wonder what Sterling's going to do. He's very litigious. You know, he's just a real aggressive, mean guy.
He has sued the NBA, by the way. So that's a relatively new update. I'm glad you brought that up. That needs to be stated. He has sued the NBA. So this is going to be tied up in the courts for years, assuming at 81 years old and with prostate cancer, Sterling lives that long. But, yeah, it's going to be locked up in the courts for years before a decision. I hope he sticks it to him. I hope he really does. But, folks, be sure to check out Kevin's article about this.
Next year. They'll have the opportunity not to play the next year and see what happens.
Yeah, I would like to see that happen. TheOccidentalObserver.net. Support it, read it, donate to it. Kevin, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Kevin McDonald, everybody. The great Kevin McDonald. We'll be back right after this.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. it's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show. We have just about exhausted Donald Sterling, but I thought with the amount of attention being dedicated to that particular story by the establishment media, certainly a lengthy response from the political cesspool was in order, and we had two of the best help provide it tonight. Richard Spencer of the National Policy Institute, Dr. Kevin McDonald, professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, both scholars, both great guests and regular guests, mainstays on this show. We're going to depart from that now, however, and welcome back to the studio after a one-week hiatus, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, who, of course, as you know, folks, was in Nashville a week ago tonight. Actually, at this time last week, he was driving home, but a week ago this morning, he would have been in the midst of a 26.2-mile marathon. Eddie called in the last segment of the third hour last week to give us a recap of that, so we won't hear all the details. We know that he made it. We know that he completed it. This was his fourth marathon, 67 years old. We got a picture of Eddie. Were you at the finish line in that picture we put up at the website, Eddie?
I think that picture was at the start line.
At the start line there at the Bridgestone Arena where the NHL's Nashville Predators play. Downtown Nashville is beautiful. I mean, it's night and day from downtown Memphis. You don't have to wear a bulletproof vest in downtown Nashville. Anyway, Eddie is back. Keith will be back with us next week. Of course, he was out of town last week and at a function tonight, but he'll be back next week, back to full strength. So, Eddie, say whatever you want to say. First of all, again, congratulations on behalf of the audience and certainly myself on completing that marathon. Once again, congratulations. And I'll let you say a quick word about that. And I know you want to get into a politically related, I wouldn't say flare-up, but conversation that you had there while visiting Nashville last week.
Well, hello, everybody out there. And I would like to just tell you people out there that I do love you from the heart. I'm going to talk a little off the cuff right now, a little spontaneous porch talk, as my little son James would say. I became a Christian. It was 5 years ago in February. And since that day, my personality and my psyche and my soul has totally changed. I can't believe how I love people. I used to, you know, in the old days, I seldom loved anybody. But and the reason I'm telling you that is because I can truthfully say that I love each and everybody out there in this audience that supports us. You support us, whether or not you even ever send in a nickel, which would be nice if you did. But if you, even if you don't, God bless you for listening to us and putting up with us, because so many people, you know, just dump on us constantly and say we're racist bigots and every kind of, you know, just every kind of horrible language you can imagine. And I would just like, I know we've hammered this before, but I'd like to point it out again. And not, you know, this isn't my glory. All the glory to God. Like James says, I'm 67 years old. I've been knocking out a marathon every 4 months. And every one of them has been to raise money for St. Jude Hospital. I brought my medals over here the other day and showed James and his beautiful family. One of them was given to me for finishing successfully the marathon, and one of them was given to me from St. Jude Children's Research Hospital's ALSAC St. Jude, their fundraising apparatus, because I've raised a certain amount of money. And it was a lot of money. And as a matter of fact, it was, I'm not going to brag, but it was more money probably than the cesspool takes in probably in a quarter to run our cesspool. And a lot of that money came from you people out there. And the selfish part of me is I cannot tell you how much I love running. It's opened up an entire different world for me. I get into another zone. People spoke to me when I was in Nashville. I couldn't even, and they told me, people that were in Memphis that were running, say, hey, Pawpaw. Some of them call me Pawpaw, some call me Papaw. Said, we could not get your attention. Well, anyway, I would like to thank you for that. I want to thank you just with every cell in my body for supporting the cesspool, supporting our little thing. We support St. Jude Children's Hospital right here. But yes, I did have a wonderful time there. And, you know, they have a thing called the Fitness and Health Expo. in Nashville. It's on Thursday and Friday, the 24th and the 25th of April. Well, the marathon was run on April the 26th, which was a Saturday. And I told James about when I was up there on Thursday, you know, I like to go up there and see all my friends, all my buddies. I'm not going to name any names because I don't want to get in trouble. But, you know, we have Fort Campbell, Kentucky is really probably as much of it as in Tennessee as it is in Kentucky, because Nashville up there is not far from the Tennessee-Kentucky line. We had some soldiers coming in, several different outfits, all stationed at Fort Campbell. And I really felt sorry for them. Most of them were real, real young, as you might imagine. And you know, James, and I don't brag about this, you know, just like I couldn't possibly run without God, you know, with all my health ailments, been in cardiac intensive care in 07, no cartilage in my right knee, scar tissue in my brainstem. I was drafted and I survived. I came home, you know, alive. But I see these young people up there at Fort Polk, and from Fort Campbell. Believe it or not, I'm getting to a point. I saw all these young guys coming up there, and the previous morning before I went there, I read where the United States was sending ground troops into Poland. I hit my knee as soon as I read that. I don't know if I told James or not, but I told James I was very disturbed about that. I said, "Dear God, please, please, God, don't let us get a war started with Russia. I mean, we're not talking about a bunch of sheep herders over here in Afghanistan or in the hills of Iraq. We're talking about a power that has nuclear bombs, and they have a way to launch those bombs. They can hit any city in Europe. They have submarines surrounding this country." And I'm thinking, hopefully it doesn't come to that. But even if it doesn't come to that, we got these mind-numbed little robots up there with the 101st Airborne and other supporting units, thinking that they can just walk through lead, they can walk through kryptonite, you know, they're indestructible. I remember being that age when I was 18, 19, 20 years old. And so I pulled a few of them aside, and I asked them, you know, said,
As a former soldier.
And I told them, I said, "Listen, I'm telling you, I've got not one, but I've got two honorable discharges. I've been where you are. Please, God, I hope they don't send you to Russia to use you as cannon fodder. Because I'm telling you flat out, what took me a long time to learn, I'm going to pass this on to you as a grandfather type. You're not fighting for your country. You're not fighting for the South. You're not fighting for mom and apple pie in the sovereignty of the United States. You're fighting for the globalist, for the international bankers. I would much rather see you desert and refuse to go over there and get killed for Wall Street, for the Federal Reserve, for the international Zionist globalist. I'd rather see you do that. They would be far more honored than that than you going over there and getting blown to bits. And that's what's going to happen to you. You're going to be cannon fodder." And I went on telling, and it fell on deaf ears. And you know, none of them really got really hostile. Like I said, I see a few of them thought, well, I was unpatriotic, and you know, they probably thought I was just this old buffoon, you know, a senile, he's old guy, he's a grandpa, he's old. But I tried to counsel these soldiers, and it was just like talking to the wind. They didn't pay any attention to me. "Oh, we're not worried. We got this, man. We've been training for Russia." And I said, "Well, you know, let me just give you a little bit of history here. I don't know if you know this or not, but Russia has been around way yonder before the United States has even been around, before we even had a country. And you know something else? They have never lost a war. Oh, they you might say they surrendered in the First World War when the communists took over in the First World War when they were half-heartedly fighting Germany, a war they didn't want to fight, that was brought upon them by the globalists, just like this that's being brought upon now. But Russia has never lost a war. I mean, Napoleon was, you didn't get any better than Napoleon. Napoleon went in there and just faced utter disaster. The Germans, the greatest fighting machine the world has ever seen, the Germans went into Russia and got bogged down. The place is huge. It's gigantic. It makes the United States look like, you know, a small place. I told him all this. I said, "I'm telling you flat out, if you go over there, if it breaks out, you're gonna die. You're the vanguard. You're the 101st. You're airborne units. You're the vanguard. You're gonna be the first. You know, I said, we're some Rangers up there. Rangers first to fight. You're gonna die in Russia for no reason." I said, "Take it for what it's worth. If you have, just refuse. Just don't go. Just flat out, don't go." But anyway, I wanted to get that off my chest because
they said they did.
They said, "Man, that's what we've been training for." And this leads to something else I wanted to get to last week that we didn't get to. This wasn't on the script. By the way, most of this is off the script right now. But I would like to beg you people out there to do everything you can in your power to stop this buildup, to stop this march toward war. I really don't know if we're headed to war or not. It could be a false flag. There's because, you know, there's so, they keep so many false flags going when I say the globalist powers that be. You really never know if it's going to be a real war, you know, or if it's going to be a fake war like the Cold War was. The Cold War was run by, you know, Wall Street. We know that now. You can look up Anthony Sutton's great book, The Greatest Enemy That Money Can Buy. The best enemy that money can buy. People, looks like we're getting ready to go to a break, and I'll try to wind this up before we go back to some other news on the Benghazi cover-up when we come back from the break. But listen, once again, let me tell you, God bless you. I love you, people, and please tune in. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us tonight. Go back to James right now.
Let's hang on. Get ready to go to this break. Just here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Welcome back to Get On The Show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool, everybody. James Edwards and Eddie the Bombardier Miller here, folks. We're doing what we do, okay? We're doing what we've done for 10 years now. And for the first time in 10 years, this fall, we're going to take a moment to pause and reflect on the miracle that we've all accomplished together. Folks, if you have contributed to the Political Cesspool radio program over the years, you will be receiving in your mailbox this week. Perhaps you already have received it. I think a couple of them, a couple hundred rather, went out yesterday. The rest will go out on Monday. You're going to receive an invitation to join us for the Political Cesspool's 10-year anniversary celebration. It is a personal invitation. I sat down and personally signed several hundred of these invitations. I addressed them individually, and I personally, with my hand, signed each one of them because it is important that as many of you as possibly can will indeed join us this fall in Memphis. You're talking about a radio show that has really been a game changer for our people, for our issues, a show that is second to none in terms of talking about issues exclusively related to European Americans, and a network that's second to none when it comes to fighting for the liberties and freedoms of all Americans. This, look, 10 years, that is a momentous anniversary. And for the first time since our kickoff party in 2004, we're going to host a gathering. And when you receive that invitation in the mail that I personally signed for you, I want you to read it. I want you to get back to us. And I want you to take advantage of this opportunity to not be among us, to meet us. That's, I don't know if that's something that's a blessing or a curse by the time you get done with it. But no, take advantage of the opportunity to meet other Political Cesspool fans. The family, our audience, okay, we're a family. Meet other members of your listening family in Memphis this fall as we celebrate 10 years on the radio. So, again, just a momentary departure here to tell you to be paying attention to your mailbox this week and follow those instructions and make plans to take a trip, a vacation. We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some great speakers. We're going to have a concert pianist. We are going to do a live remote broadcast of the Political Cesspool for everyone to enjoy in person. You get to watch us do the show. You get to participate, and it's going to be rowdy. It's going to be loud. There's going to be cheering. Girls are going to be fainting and throwing the room keys at Eddie and Keith. You know? So anyway, no, folks, seriously, join us, and we're going to have a good time, and you will be getting that invitation in the mail. If you are a Political Cesspool contributor, you get first dibs. And that'll be coming to you. Okay, Eddie, you were out of here last week, so I'm giving you the reins of the horse here and letting you drive it any which direction you'd like. In the third hour, folks, we're going to talk about a few things as well, including the fact that John Kerry accidentally told the truth last week and is catching all kinds of grief over it. We're going to tell you what John Kerry did and said and the reaction to that in the third hour. Confederate History Month's over, but Eddie the Bombardier Miller didn't get a chance in April to really weigh in on it. And so we're going to give him that opportunity in the third hour as well to talk about with the South. Even though we're technically out of Confederate History Month, we're going to have a parting shot and let Eddie talk about that. And we're going to play a song for you. At the top of the third hour, we're going to play a song for you before we get to the Kerry thing. It's an electric guitar version of Dixie, okay? But what makes this so interesting is that it was arranged and performed by one of our quarterly donors, a man who has already signed up to join us in Memphis this fall at the aforementioned event. We got all kinds of talent in our audience, and the name of the CD is Good Versus Evil, and the name of the song is Never Forgotten, and it includes in it, there's a prelude, an instrumental prelude, and then you get into the electric guitar version of Dixie, and I think it just sounds great. And so we're going to play that. And this is, again, a longtime listener of the Political Cesspool. Great guy. Had the opportunity to meet with him this week when I picked up some CDs. So all that's still forthcoming in the third hour. I guess I talked longer than I had intended to. But all things we wanted to say, especially making mention of that event in October, which is going to be historic. A once-in-a-decade event, folks. We're not talking about an annual gathering. I know there's some great organizations out there that do annual conferences. That's not what we're doing here. This is a once-in-a-decade event. It's going to be historic, and it's much more than a conference. Even though we're going to have speakers and we're going to have dinner banquets, we're going to have music, we're going to do the show. You hadn't partied until you partied with the Political Cesspool, guys. Let me tell you that.
You've got that right. I'd like to chime in on Dixie. You know what? I'm an old dude, and I like the old traditional music, but I'm going to flat tell you, Any way you can play Dixie, it sounds mighty good to Papaw right here. I'm telling you flat out, I love that song, Dixie. Matter of fact, I consider it my national anthem. I hope nobody gives me any grief, but I don't salute the Stars and Stripes anymore, people. I salute the Stars and Bars. And we've gone over that 100 times before, but just know that the good guys lost the war between the states, and I don't know why. Maybe God was punishing us, but as far as I'm concerned, I'll get off this real quick. We are living under an occupational force. The occupational force never left the South. It's called the United States government, and I don't consider myself a United States citizen. I consider myself a Confederate American. But at least I'd like to wipe up, go back to two things and finish up on what I spoke about a minute ago. On this war with Russia, what you need to do, people, I'm telling you flat out, you need to do what we're doing here in Memphis. You need to go, and you need to go, when I say go, you need to go in person. You need to go see your congressman, representative, your congress critter, and you need to go see your senator. And you need to not just go once, but you need to go in groups and force, and you need to impress upon these people that you don't want a thermonuclear war. You don't want to go in there and tug on Russia's cape. They are capable of incinerating us. And if it doesn't come to that, we don't want our good southern boys going off to die in Russia, just like they died here in the war between the states. If you look back to it in history, it was a banker war, just like all wars are banker wars. It was a globalist war. Yes, the globalists were working even in those days. They've been working for hundreds of years. They don't think in terms of 5 years, 2 years like we do. They think in terms of centuries because they're working for their father, the devil. But you need to do that, because if you don't, there is a big chance. If we go to war, once you start a war, like to quote Dr. Stanley Monteith, once you start a war, you never know where it's going to end. And before we get off of that, we mentioned the marathon. I'd just like to say one more time, I know we probably beat this to death, but I'll tell you what, the way the Seth Pugh gets slaughtered by the mainstream media, we're so rotten and stinking. I'm telling you flat out, folks, we bled for St. Jude. We contributed a lot of money for St. Jude. I'm telling you flat out, we probably, I don't know, James knows more about it than I do, because he's got better eyes. He can count the pennies and dimes better than I can. But we put out a lot of money. It cost the cesspool a lot of money to support St. Jude, and you people were part of it. And I would just like to say, every time you hear somebody attacking us, be it the SPLC or, the NAACP, and no matter who it is, just think, ask them, well, how much did you contribute to Le Bonheur? How much did you contribute to the Children's Hospital in Little Rock? How much have you contributed to your local hospital? How much could you attribute to St. Jude? Because St. Jude is an international hospital that treats everybody. That's right. Of all races. All races. I have picked up and hugged children of every race at St. Jude. When I go into St. Jude, people, I kind of hate to admit it in a way, but I leave my sword outside. And that's the only place I know of that I leave my sword. I leave my religion. I leave my politics and my sword outside. The only other place I do that is the place where I go run. I'm not even going to mention where I go run, because it's kind of like a form of escape to me, where I get away from the bullets and the bombs once in a while. What kind of bullets and bombs I'm talking about. Would you like to chime in on that for a minute, James, before we go something else, son? And he is my son in every way you can be a son.
Well, thank you for that. What you've done is admirable, and certainly people of the audience supported your run. I mean, I don't want to, when we do fundraisers, obviously that money goes to help keep the show on the air. So we didn't take money out of the general coffers and give it to St. Jude. They gave above and beyond what they normally give, our members of our audience did, what they give to the show, and helped you. And of course you donated to yourself, and I donated to you as well, just like I donate to the show. We don't ever ask anybody to do something for us that we don't do for ourselves. So no, I didn't want it to be for them to think that the money they had sent in to keep the show on the air was redirected to your run. But no, they were so good that they gave that and then some, an extra, specifically to help your cause. And those people who made that decision to do that were quite selfless. But no, I mean, the issues that we talk about here on this show aren't controversial at all to open-minded, free-thinking people. And even if you disagree with us, that's fine. Most people that I've met, normal Americans, working class, the people who make this country work, they do agree with us. But irregardless, we see ourselves as very traditional Americans. very traditional Americans. You know, this is a show that has been created. I created this show 10 years ago with the purpose for serving as a voice for the dispossessed majority. We would talk about issues that are supposed to be hushed up or distorted, and we're going to talk about them. We're going to do it from a pro-white perspective, not at the expense of anyone else, of course, and everyone knows that. And the rest is history. And, you know, we certainly have people of other races who support this show, even though it's primarily a show for whites. We have people of other faiths that support this show, even though we're all Christians. And anybody that supports the message, we're going to stand with them. And we're not going to compromise or alter our beliefs. Our beliefs are what they are. But if you agree with us, then we're happy to have you. We're going to take a break.